Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m, and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life, from maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Sharon Schaefer, who in July 2021 joined Saffron Walden-based sight loss charity Support for Sight as their chief executive officer, following a number of years of involvement in the sight loss sector. Prior to her work in the charity sector, Sharon had a career in the theatre, touring the country as an actor and running a very successful theatre company too. Hello Sharon, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for inviting me, Toby.
So Sharon, how did you find it just selecting 7 tracks for your Tracks of My Life?
Well, actually, it's really difficult, isn't it? I mean, I kind of sat down and went through things, and some of them really sprung out, obviously. But what I found really interesting was when I got to 1999, which is the year I had my first child, right at the end of 99. She was very nearly a millennium babe, but she did manage to come in on the 18th of December, a bit earlier than expected. And from that moment on, I really didn't have any more tracks of my life. So the whole of the 21st century, I have been thinking, I just want golden silence. When I have a moment to myself, I don't want any track on, I don't want any music playing, I just want absolute silence so that my mind can unravel in any way it wants. So, you know, now I have 3 children and silence is even more golden. So from 1999, I think I've got maybe 2 tracks that I in my list of 7, and then all the others are 20th century tracks.
Well, your first track is going to take us back to the late 1970s and an artist who certainly inspired many people back then. Before we talk a little bit about that particular artist, could you tell me what life was like for you back then? Where were you? What were you doing? And what was life like?
Well, the late 70s, I think I was in my mini militant phase. I was quite active in student politics. I mean, I think I am still pretty militant, but I'm not so mini now. I'm all grown up. And the track I picked was an X-Ray Specs track. I mean, polystyrene, what a hero, what an anti-hero. She just really inspired me. So I thought that could be my first track to set the ball rolling, the day the world turned day-glow.
And what did X-Ray Specs and this particular track say to you at that particular time of your life?
I think that you could be a rebel. I remember I was a radical feminist at the age of 14. I hope, you know, almost every 14-year-old girl is a radical feminist. And polystyrene was really embodying that. She wasn't kind of doing all the pretty, pretty stuff like someone like Debbie Harry was doing, to my mind, or even Susie Sue and Susie and the Banshees. I thought they just looked too female conventional, to my mind, and polystyrene absolutely wasn't. She was, you know, being absolutely herself, not being at all pretty, pretty, girly, girly.
Dayglow by Exo Specs Fair, and certainly an artist who has inspired many people to get on the stage and perform and to really speak out for people's rights as well. For your next track, Sharon, we are moving on a couple of years to mid-teenage life for you, and we're going to the time when you first became aware of David Bowie for the first time. What did David Bowie sort of say to you at that time?
I know, 16, and I was discovering David Bowie. I think maybe I did things kind of back to front a bit, didn't I? But, I mean, David Bowie inspired so many people. And I think you always think that you're the first person to ever discover anything. And I remember myself and my best friend, Aunt Antonina, sitting in either one of our bedrooms, just to say, oh, have you heard this track? Oh, have you heard that track? And it was all that kind of voyage of discovery and having your mind blown. And David Bowie just managed to do that because he was, you know, he was a bit of rock and roll. He was playing around with characters and personas. We were starting out on our drama foundation courses, and he was just really interesting. And the track that I've chosen out of all the ones that I could is Starman, because I just think, who doesn't want to have someone waiting in the sky to blow their minds? Hey, isn't that wonderful?
And at the age of 16, did you have any idea of what you wanted to do in life? You mentioned just now that you were doing sort of drama studies and things like that. Did you think that you were going to become a performer, or did you have any other ideas on what you wanted to do in life?
Absolutely, yes. I was going to be a world famous actress, of course. But I did pursue that dream, I must say. So I went off to sixth form college in, when would that have been, 81, I suppose. And that was a foundation drama course. So we did theatre studies, English, ballet, and it was a full-time, fully timetabled course. And it was absolutely fantastic. And that was me starting off my drama training, having grown up in, you know, the local youth theatre, and followed that through to the next stage. Then after that, I wanted to go on to a drama academy like RADA or Guildhall or something, and then go out and follow a career in acting. So that was very much my line of sight. I very much knew what I wanted to do, yes.
And when you hear Starman, the David Bowie track that you've selected, what sort of memories of that time of your life does it bring back to you?
It brings back myself and Aunt in her bedroom, or my bedroom, either one, just on a voyage of discovery. I mean, amongst all that, there was, you know, Lou Reed as well. But I think David Bowie was the one that really got our imaginations. And so I picture us just sitting there and the excitement of it and the sing-along of it. Oh, my goodness, the hairbrushes came out and we would dance around the room and, oh, just discover every track that we could.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some rock and roll, like a solo set.
Starman there by the late David Bowie, who I think certainly inspired many people in their life and who is sadly missed. Sharon, we are moving from the 1980s into the early 1990s and touring with the White Horse Theatre Company. How did you get into performing with the White Horse Theatre Company? How did that come about?
Well, I'd like to say it was just my natural theatrical talent, but I think it was really because when they asked everybody who could speak German, I was one of the few people that put my hand up. And I did it on the basis that I'd kind of done an O-level in German about, you know, 9 years before that. So I thought it would get me brownie points. So I stuck my hand up and lo and behold, I did get through and I did get the job. And there I was touring around Germany. There are little groups of three of us in a van. And I was indeed the only person in that van who could speak German very, very badly. But nevertheless, I did give it a go and did manage to communicate with, you know, the theatre managers and the schools that we played in across the country in very bad German. And the track that I've chosen was something that we had a little cassette tape, so this was 1990, of Tom Waits' Closing Time on one side, and They Might Be Giants, Flood, the album was called, on the other side. And we just played that tape constantly as we would drive from venue to venue to venue all across southern Germany. So it's very evocative of those days, sitting in the van. And the track that I have chosen is Rosie, because it's just got such a brilliant lilt. It's so full of yearning and sentimentality, and I just love it.
And what type of theatre company was White Horse Theatre Company, and what sort of productions were you touring around southern Germany?
It was an English-speaking theatre company that used to tour German schools and art centres. So playing largely to schools' audiences, school children, teenagers, in using English language. We did two productions. One of them was a kind of serious drama called I Thought I Heard a Cuckoo. And I can't remember who wrote it, I'm sorry to say. And the other one was a bit of a romp, a bit of a tongue-in-cheek comedy called Neighbours with Long Teeth, which was all about vampires, but dealing with the theme of, you know, tolerance, acceptance, non-racism. And yes, so we toured those all around Bavaria and the Black Forest, in schools and art centres, and it was wonderful. I mean, we did it for about 8 months. I think the contract was quite a long contract. So we had some wonderful times and saw a lot of wonderful places. And I really enjoyed performing those two shows.
Rosie by Tom Waits there, and fond memories for you, Sharon, of touring around southern Germany in a van with the White Horse Theatre Company. We are now moving to the mid-late 1990s with your next track, Sharon, and you've moved from the White Horse Theatre Company to another theatre company. What made you want to move from the White Horse Theatre Company?
Well, as an actor, a jobbing actor, you do go from job to job. So you, you know, sign a contract for however long the production is. And then at the end of it, you're out of work and looking for the next contract. So, you know, with White Horse Theatre, the contract was, as I said, I think about 8 months. And then at the end of it, I went on to another one. And, you know, long periods of unemployment as well, Toby, where you're picking up all your so-called resting jobs, which in my case was usually working in various care homes, to be honest. And then along came Chaos Theatre. And Chaos Theatre was something that my husband and I ran for 14 years. So it was the real bulk of my acting life. I didn't become a world famous actress and go off to Hollywood. No. I ran my own theatre company with my husband, and it was an incredible experience. We toured all over Britain and Ireland, and we also toured internationally through the British Council and did some productions that I think were stunning and groundbreaking, or at least that's what people described it as. So who am I to disagree? But it was a very major, major part of my career. And the song that I have chosen is, I wonder if anyone in the cast will ever hear this, because it was a song that we sang in our production of The Importance of Being Earnest. And honestly, I am not a singer, and I managed to murder this song every single night. So if any of the cast ever hear this, they will be laughing out loud to hear The Flower Song by Delib, because I really did sing it very, very badly.
And what made you and your husband set up the theatre company? Was it something that you wanted to do because a way of, I suppose, maybe getting work perhaps, or was there sort of more to it than that?
It was a funny kind of organic thing, really. I was in a two-hander with a guy called Phil Moore, and Phil had set up Chaos Theatre with a couple of his university friends when he was up studying in Newcastle, I think it was. And a friend of mine who I was at university with, who ended up running an art centre in Cirencester, said to Phil, "Well, come and launch your theatre company here. I've got an art centre. You can have free space, free rehearsal room. You're a local boy. Come back from uni and launch the theatre here." So he did. And we did a production of Hamlet, which is where I met my future husband. And so we all decided to throw in our lot and work full time with Chaos Theatre. And then Phil emigrated to Australia. And so myself and Javier, my husband, kind of thought, oh, right, well, what do we do now? Well, why don't we run it? Why don't we take on the theatre company? So we did. We ran Chaos Theatre UK, and Phil ran Chaos Theatre Australia. We did some partnership working across the globe, and the company ran until 2008, I'm very pleased to say. And yes, it did give us the control that we wanted to make the kind of work that we really wanted to make in a very precarious profession.
And what is it really like being on stage as a performer and being in the wings, waiting to go on and actually treading the boards, as one might say?
Well, I think there is absolutely nothing else like it. It's absolutely crystallizes the moment. For me, it's just, I guess, a way of being very, very mindful. You cannot be anywhere else. I know some people might say, oh, you know, I can recite Shakespeare whilst thinking about the shopping list. Well, no, I can't. I have to be absolutely in the moment and acting and reacting to all the other people on stage, what the audience is giving me. And it just gives me that absolute perfect moment in time for those 2 hours that you're on the stage. You're absolutely right there, right now. And there's nothing else like it.
We are now moving to the end of the 1990s and a trip to Australia for you and your husband. And I think you even obviously got married out in Australia. Why Australia, and why did you possibly want to get away from things at that time?
Well, it was a perfect storm, shall we say. But my husband and I, after living together for about 5 years, announced that, yes, all right, then we would get married, which absolutely thrilled his parents, who, you know, were just so relieved that we were going to get married. My mother was absolutely thrilled because we could probably have a great big all singing, all dancing party. And we decided that we were never going to be able to please both sides of the family. I think my husband's parents just wanted us to do something low-key, just get the certificate, make it all, you know, legal and official, and not have the all singing, all dancing party. And we had this huge argument and almost had a divorce before we ever got married, trying to please all the people all the time. And we had arranged, I think it was round about the 27th of December, just after Christmas, we were flying off to Perth in Australia because my husband was going to be working with Chaos Theatre Australia on their Millennium project. Chaos Theatre had won the Millennium Prize for Perth's Millennium Festival, which was held in 1999, not the year 2000. And they were going to perform, start rehearsals to perform a play that he'd written all about Leonardo da Vinci. So we flew out and I was going to stay there for 3 weeks just before rehearsals started and then fly back again because our show with Chaos Theatre UK was continuing to tour actually in Ireland. We were doing The Master and Margarita in Ireland. So I had that 3 week window and then he was going into rehearsal and I was flying back to tour. And when we got there, we thought, goodness me, why don't we just get married right here, right now on the other side of the world and cut out all the hassle of trying to do everything right by other people. And in Australia, you don't have the rules that you have here of having to be in a licensed venue and within licensed hours. I remember phoning up the chief registrar or something, looking in the yellow pages and phoning up the chief registrar who said, yes, of course you can get married. And I said, well, when? How? What do we have to do? And he said, well, anytime you want. Anywhere you want, as long as you can get a celebrant there willing to do it. And so that's exactly what we ended up doing. We got married on stage at His Majesty's Theatre Perth on the 16th of January 1999. And we had to have our honeymoon beforehand because, as I say, I was flying back. My husband was going into rehearsals. So we actually did it topsy-turvy. And we went for 3 days up to the Pinnacles in Western Australia, which is this kind of desert land with these natural sand columns just rising up, these sand pillars rising up out of the ground. It's an absolutely amazing phenomenon. And it is about, I don't know, 3 hours north of Perth, which in Australian distances is a hop, skip and a jump. For us, it's, you know, a whole big trek. But on the way, we were playing Gomez's album and Miles Away is the track that I've chosen because we did go miles away.
Gomez there and Miles Away and memories for you, Sharon, of your wedding and pre-wedding honeymoon in Australia. We're now going to move to the mid-2010s and a track that was played at one of the very famous London VI Forum Christmas meetings / parties. I think they were more of a party than a meeting, if I can remember, because I've been to a few of them. What made you want to work within the visually impaired sector at that time? And did you see yourself ever becoming, as you have done, chief exec of a sight loss sector charity?
Well, no, I didn't. It wasn't at all part of the career plan. but I am very, very happy and lucky and privileged to be here, I must say. I stumbled into this when the theatre company, when Chaos Theatre closed in 2008, I was thinking, well, how do I reinvent myself? And a friend of mine who had actually worked with us as our very first producer was working in the charity sector and said, you know, Sharon, you could very easily transfer a lot of your skills in theatre management into the charity sector. Why don't you do a bit of project work with me? So I did, and worked with her in Barnet for a couple of years. And then as that was coming to a close, another contact, it's always contacts, isn't it, Toby? It's not what you know, it's who you know, said that the London Visual Impairment Forum were looking for somebody just 2 days a week to keep the forum going. Their original bit of funding was coming to an end, so they wanted to kind of buy some time while they looked around for more funding for it. So I went along and worked with the Metropolitan Society for the Blind, as it was called in those days, it's now Blind Aid, 2 days a week, just managing the London VI Forum. And we used to hold these quarterly meetings downstairs at R&IB in Judd Street and just bring the London VI sector together. It was an absolutely brilliant network. I thoroughly loved it, and it just gave me such an overview of who did what and how it all fitted together and what was happening in the sector. So it was a great way to catapult into that environment. And I must say, the Christmas ones were just good fun, weren't they? I don't know if you were there for this particular one. I imagine that you were, Toby, but we used to bring in the sherry and mince pies, and people used to bring in various bits and bobs, and we always used to make sure that we had some performance in the programme. And this particular one I've chosen is Baluji Srivastav and the Inner Vision Orchestra, who came along 1 year, and I think it might have been 2014, but I'm not absolutely sure, and just brought their lovely fusion of Indian and British music and played for us in the basement in Judd Street, and it was absolutely wonderful.
The Inner Vision Orchestra there, and a track that brings back fond memories of those London VI Forum meetings, or parties, as one might say. Sharon, we now come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Well, I think this was the hardest one, actually, Toby, but I've chosen Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel, because I just love Art Garfunkel's voice. I mean, the clarity of his voice is just so beautiful and so haunting. And the song itself has just such a brilliant sentiment. And I think, to me, it just really resonates. I think that, I suppose, in my work, in my life, my family, this is what I try and do to make it easy, make life easier, support people around me to sail on and shine. And I hope that other people will do the same. And by being that bridge, we will make the world a better place for each other. So that's it. That's my legacy track.
Well, What a wonderful track to end on. And thank you very much indeed, Sharon Chaffer, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much, Toby, for asking me. It's just been such joy and a privilege and really, really interesting to have to sum up your life in seven tracks. So thank you for that opportunity.